After the Bondi massacre, state and federal governments passed hate speech laws. It's part of an effort to build social cohesion in a country scarred by recent anti-Semitism and other religious hatred. But does banning phrases such as "from the river to the sea," usually a reference to a Palestinian state, promote cohesion? Can any law mandate unity? Kieran Hardy is a criminologist at Griffith University and co-author of a new paper on the issue.
On the face of it, they're addressing very real threats around hate crime and extremism in society and the potential for that to fuel more serious acts of violence as well. In Queensland, there are the two specific phrases that are banned, and we've seen one person be arrested on the day of those laws came into effect. In Queensland, we have very specific phrases, whereas most of the time in hate crime laws, we've seen more sort of offences around serious intimidation or harassment and so on, what we call vilification.
And this was a woman who was wearing a T-shirt that said, "from the river to the sea."
I'd also seen a young man as well be arrested, so we'll sort of monitor over the coming days and weeks what happens with these laws. The laws certainly risk constitutional challenge, but striking down laws in Australia on the grounds of, say, freedom of speech is particularly difficult to do. More likely, there might be some amendments to the laws if the controversy around them becomes significant enough that, say, the next government changes them, or that seems to me a more likely outcome.
Now, these laws, even as imperfect as you point out, they're obviously a very understandable desire to instill social cohesion. I mean, that's something that you and Professor Rebecca Wicks write about in your recent article, and we'll put a link to it. I mean, the Prime Minister has called for social cohesion on, I think, 35 times. Can it be conjured out of law, though, Kieran? That's the point, social cohesion.
Yeah, and like you say, as a starting point, there's very good reason for these laws. You know, we are dealing with very serious threats of extremism in society across all sorts of different ideologies. We've got conspiracy thinking and right-wing extremism in addition to your sort of more traditional ISIS and Al-Qaeda-style ideologies. So the idea of trying to keep the temperature down on public debate, protests, all that kind of thing, makes a lot of sense as just that starting point. But we are now at the point that I suppose that there's a bit of an irony or contradiction in saying we're trying to build or improve social cohesion or enhance social cohesion through laws that punish people for saying certain things in society. So it's a bit of a conundrum. We do have a real problem to deal with. I'm just not convinced that laws and coercive laws are the best way to go about that, especially if they're seen as clamping down on freedom of speech.
As you've said, you're not an absolutist on this, but I wonder what some of the foundations of social cohesion are that it is hard to implement in law.
When we talk about social cohesion, it's more positive things like trust and markers of a good society, generally speaking, you know, social mobility, might be health, education, all these sorts of things that feed into it. Putting a few people in prison for hate crime offences is not really going to build social cohesion. There might be some logic to the idea that, well, if we take out a few bad apples out of the mix, we might have, you know, a better environment in which to create social cohesion. There might be some logic there, and I can understand that. But we really are talking about dealing with some threats to social cohesion in a pretty blunt way, when social cohesion really means much more wide-ranging positive things about society, like how do we help young people get the best opportunities later in life? How do we build a healthy democracy? All those sorts of things. And a new criminal offence for somebody harassing someone or saying these specific words is not going to build social cohesion according to the sorts of markets that we talk about.
I hasten to add, I mean, you're not opposing laws that actually take dangerous people who've committed violent offences off the streets. You're not opposing those laws. But it does strike me there's something in this article that you wrote where you said we're not simply talking about the absence of conflict, as critically important as the absence of conflict is, but the presence of social bonds and shared norms. I gather laws are impossible to make to ensure those sorts of things.
That definition was from a recent paper by Biddle and Gray at the Australian National University, saying when we talk about social cohesion, we're not just saying the absence of conflict. So you can take the bad apples out and you can address these threats, but we're taking out deficits or addressing threats, but we're not putting anything into credit. And I don't think laws can put something positive like trust, social relationships, social bonds into credit, into the sort of positive column talking about social cohesion. You could say that these laws might impact on some measures of trust and inclusion if people say, oh, the governments are taking really decisive action on this. We're protecting our healthy society, and that gives us a strong sense of our democracy. There may well be some effect like that. I would just say that I think, given the controversy over the laws already, the way that they were rushed through Parliament, particularly over the Christmas break in response to the Monday terror attack, there's been sufficient reason to think that these laws have actually raised the temperature of a lot of public debate. They're a bit of a blunt instrument rushed through. There's a political benefit, and there may well be some social benefit in governments taking decisive action on this. But to build social cohesion, we're really talking about longer term efforts to build a healthy society. And again, I'm not saying that punishing people for the sort of threats that they pose and the harm they pose is a bad thing. Maybe these laws go a little bit too far in targeting freedom of speech, and that will cause more problems. We do already have a wide range of criminal offences for terrorism and all sorts of other problematic conduct. So it's not like we're wanting for laws that could punish people. Adding more laws that will punish people for even broader things around speech may do more harm than good.
I do have to ask though, Kieran, isn't there a case for these laws as in setting a red line in public discourse? You've crossed a line here. It is the very definition of extremism. Is there not a case for that?
I think there is a case for that. Say the Queensland laws, when you start targeting specific phrases, it starts getting quite problematic. I mean, I could go out in public and say all sorts of vile things about a group in society and not necessarily breach the law. But if I happen to say these specific words, and it's not for me to say how offensive those words are, I think there's been very strong views either way. But if I go say all sorts of vile things about a group, I might not be guilty of a criminal offence, but if I say these particular words, I am. That red line argument is already muddy because it's not necessarily clear where that line is or that there's a definite logic to it. Those arguments can be made, and I do understand them, but I think maybe these particular laws that we've got aren't necessarily the best way to go about them.
Yeah, in your article, you and Rebecca Wicks also point out this question of socioeconomic factors and the whole notion of socioeconomic factors and social cohesion has come up as people try to understand the story of populism and why it has such an appeal. What are these socioeconomic factors that you think are being overlooked?
If you think just generally about the sort of environment that everyone's in at the moment, we talk about a cost of living crisis, housing costs, all sorts of pressures that people are under. Now, it's difficult in a research sense to draw direct lines between the economic insecurity people might be facing and one particular act of violence. So we mentioned the concept of relative deprivation. That's been seen as quite important to acts of violence and political violence. There's a grievance about some people who have more in society. And despite all the effort that I'm putting in, I can't get there. We know that there are certain groups, sovereign citizens and others, where, say, financial difficulties, home difficulties, marriage and relationship difficulties are highly present in samples of people who believe in some of these more extreme ideas that can fuel things at the moment. When people are put under strain, various different strains, economic strains, personal relationship strains, all of that can then feed into criminal behaviour and other things. So it's hard to draw a direct line in individual cases, but we do know that economic insecurity, fragility sort of contributes to antisocial behaviour overall.
And the rural and regional divide here in trying to understand this appeal.
It's hard to sort of generalise about the types of threats. We probably could talk about a whole range of specific things. In the field of extremism, we can talk about sort of neo-Nazi groups, we can talk about sovereign citizens. So it's hard to generalize across those groups in a short space of time. But say I just mentioned sovereign citizens before, there's some really good research coming out around sort of regional rural inequalities and the sorts of factors that can feed into that. We know that people are doing it tough in a range of different fields, and in some cases, certainly not all cases. And that's the problem with this. You don't want to overgeneralize to the point of saying, well, anybody facing these sorts of difficulties will go down any particular path. But we just know that overall in society, it's not as healthy a place if we have things like economic insecurity, regional rural inequalities. And they're the sorts of things that if government addressed, another big one would be mental health and health and hospital access in regional and rural communities. There are so many things the government could fix and invest more money into that would boost social cohesion more than trying to say, let's stamp out this type of extremism or that type of extremism. Address those sorts of root underlying causes of disharmony in society, and that would be a much better strategy than trying to target a few people under new criminal laws.
Kieran Hardy, he's a criminologist at Griffith University with his colleague Rebecca Wicks. He's written a piece about the challenges of social cohesion. We'll put a link to that at our website. Thanks for joining us on the program, Kieran.
Thanks very much for having me.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.